Okay, this is Aiden with Oddball Pilot sitting down with Laurie Harden of Soaring NV, which you don't call Soaring Nevada.
Some people do. We get called all kinds of stuff.
And Laurie has a commercial soaring operation in northern Nevada, is what I would say, on the edge of the Eastern Sierra, which from what I understand is some of the prime soaring areas, certainly in the U.S. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk to Laurie about how she got into glider flying commercially, what it's like to run the business, and what the life of a commercial glider pilot is like. So, Laurie, when did you first get interested in glider flying?
I took a few rides as a youth, tourist rides. Okay. And when I ended up here in Carson Valley, just sort of an unplanned set of circumstances, I sort of landed here and looked around wondering what the heck I was going to do with myself. And I figured since it was one of the best glider flying sites in the U.S., they should have one of the best glider pilot schools. So at the age of 50, I decided to learn how to fly a glider.
Cool. And you never did powered planes. You just went straight to gliders. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So you had a fascination with gliders and glider flying in particular.
Yes.
And so you took that right to starting a business, the glider school.
Came right off the broom into the glider, as I like to say.
Basically,
I saw really a customer service opportunity here on the field.
Okay. Are you from this area?
No.
So you migrated here from...
Well, I grew up in New York. I lived in Palo Alto for most of my adult life, about 22 years in Palo Alto.
So this was a big shift to come up here and start a school.
Oh, yeah.
A big risk.
Well, as I tell my California friends, I moved one state east and a galaxy away.
I always say it because I spent time in Western California when I was based down in 29 Palms. But now I hang out in Bishop a lot, where Eastern California and the Eastern Sierra are way different from that whole western side.
Yeah. Right. Well, I spent an adjustment year, if you will, living in Kirkwood.
Okay.
Which is, a kind of a backwater ski area. We had over 800 inches of snow that year.
Oh, wow. So you're a skier.
Yeah. And, I didn't think there was any life outside the Bay Area. Until I moved to Kirkwood, where there's like, I think they have, a handful of year-round residents. I lived there with the family for a whole year, and loved it.
Huh.
So we decided not to go back to the Bay Area, and that's when we moved to this area. We decided to stay here.
Okay, so this was a big life change, moving here and starting the school.
Oh, yeah.
It was a whole difference, big risk.
I thought it was a calculated risk. I think that the customers that I met and the people I ran into, I think they want friendly, welcoming, nice equipment, good training. I mean, I think they want that. And we run into the normal problems of people think we're too expensive or, they're used to a club pricing schedule and we're a commercial operation. But I think overall, people welcome what we bring to the field. So in that regard, I don't think it was a risk. As far as actually making money, I'm learning that kind of the hard way, that in aviation, the expenses are high.
Yep.
That's the mind game.
It's what, as they say in aviation, to make a small fortune in aviation, you got to start with a large one.
Mm. Or my favorite saying is, there's lots of money in aviation. I put it there.
Exactly, yep. So it was a big risk. And there's a difference between clubs and commercial glider operations.
Yes.
And clubs, I've looked at a couple. I mean, they're great. They usually are less expensive. But they're also going to be there's less of a sense of professionalism to go with a club.
I'm not sure that's true across all clubs.
Depends on the club.
Yeah. But because a club will be a nonprofit, they actually can't, they have to run their gliders strictly at cost.
Right.
They typically use volunteer
tow pilots?
Volunteer or very inexpensive tow pilots, often guys who own their own tow planes who do this for fun.
Oh.
Or volunteer instructors.
Okay.
And the way, you know, they often have rules about how long you can use the glider. So if it's a really great soaring day, you know, you still get your hour and then you better get that thing back on the ground.
Right.
And as far as training goes, because it's a volunteer staff, what I hear is that it can really take a long time to get to solo and then a long time to get to your test. And sometimes we have people come here who started in the club environment and then they want to come here for an intensive week to say, okay, you know,
I really want to learn this.
You know, you're going to be here for a week and you're going to leave with your license.
Yeah.
And we sort of dedicate our resources to you, and we really take care of people. We're sort of like the soaring spa.
Okay.
You know, we get the glider ready. You're on the schedule. You don't have to pull weeds or empty the garbage or do any sort of club jobs.
You can concentrate on your training.
Right. You just come in here and train and go home, and we'll do that for you. So it's, yes, it's more expensive for the customer because they come here with a special purpose, and we do everything else.
Right. Well, this is a destination gliding spot.
Right.
So people would come from literally around the world, I imagine, to come and learn here. I mean, someplace they can come, schedule the flight. The weather's pretty reliable.
Except this winter, yes.
Well, the weather's beautiful. You just don't have your best mountain wave going on.
Well, and there's no thermals. This high-pressure system is keeping all the moisture away.
Okay.
So it's all going up and around us. If you look at the jet stream analysis, it's just going right around us. They think toward the end of the month, this is going to move out of the way, and we are going to get some moisture. So
back to the idea of doing this as a job.
Okay.
Is as a commercial operation, you're talking about the clubs have a lot of volunteer pilots, and you have pilots, glider pilots and tow pilots, who you actually pay.
Yes.
Yeah, so your tow pilots get paid as well.
Yes.
And you have full-time glider instructors / commercial. They do like scenic tours with the gliders. And that's around, for the Sierra, the scenic's not. I know in Vegas they have scenic tours now for the city, but this is more about the countryside and the mountains. Lake Tahoe. And
we do mostly we fly up to Lake Tahoe.
Okay.
Over Daggett Pass. We don't fly actually over the lake, but we get you sweeping views of the whole Tahoe Basin.
Right. Over the lake you'd have a sink.
Well, you just have to stay on tow longer.
Okay.
To go over the lake, and then you'd have to kind of come back.
Right.
Head back, and then release.
Work your way around.
Yeah.
So you have full-time commercial glider pilots / instructors, and I imagine they double as both. Or do you have some who just do the scenic flights and some who just instruct?
Well, along the continuum of licenses, you get your commercial first, and then you get your instructor rating.
Okay.
So right now we have two commercial pilots on staff that are not instructors, and then we have one instructor that's only an instructor, and then I have a guy who's an instructor and a tow pilot.
Okay.
So we try to have all...
you got a mix.
Yeah, because you really don't know what's coming at you day after day.
Right,
so
right.
We need people who can do many things.
Multitask,
yes. Overlapping skill sets. And we also have a whole bunch of on-call tow pilots. Everything from an IA on the field who loves to fly. He'll come over here and do a couple toes for us pretty much any time.
Yep.
To a retired guy who has his own Cessna. He lives over in Urington, and he flies his Cessna over here, toes for us for a day, and then he flies his Cessna home. Oh, I'm sorry, it's not a Cessna. It's a Cub. Oh, my God. He'd kill me. He'd kill me if I knew I got it wrong.
Yeah, he would kill you for that one. A Cub versus a Cessna. Woo!
Sorry, it's a beautiful, manic pedic. It's a beautiful little tail dragger.
And he doesn't tow with that. He tows with airplanes.
No. It has a tow hook on it.
Does it?
But he doesn't want to tow with it.
Yeah.
I think it's more like a showpiece. It's beautiful.
I bet. Yeah, a lot of people have their... I have some friends in Alaska of Cubs. They're more working horses up there.
Right.
But they still, they're careful. One friend, he had a Ronca Champ that I could borrow whenever I wanted. Whenever I asked about borrowing his Cub, he's like, well, you know, you could, but I've got to get you on the insurance, and it's going to take some time. And
I'll get around to it.
I'll get around to it next year. So you've got an assortment of tow pilots.
Right.
And then your glider pilots are more dedicated just to the glider. You've got a few who go back and forth.
Right.
Does some of your commercial glider pilots, are they just glider pilots, or are they powered pilots as well?
Right now, they're just glider pilots, but they're both going for single engine.
Okay. Are they working towards, like, commercial powered ratings and looking towards a career in powered flight, or are they more committed to the glider path?
Unclear, really.
Okay, they're deciding. They're having fun now.
Yeah, I mean, I really like my employees to be engaged in aviation.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to give people careers rather than jobs.
Right.
That's a real challenge for me because the business, even though we're open all year round, and one of the things Minden's known for is year-round soaring.
Right.
There is an ebb and flow to the business. So I can't have full staff all winter. I'd be dead.
Right.
I wouldn't be dead. I'd be broke.
Yeah.
So
you keep a smaller staff through the winter.
Uh-huh. And really so skeleton crew during the winter. And then we staff up, you know, round about March, although it really depends on the weather.
Right.
Last year it snowed the first week of June.
Yeah, last year was a big snow year.
Right. So this year, who knows? I mean,
if
we've kind of season shifted, you know, and the snow's going to start the end of January, are we going to be snowing through June again? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen that happen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That could kick in April.
So it really helps for me to have people that do something and do something else.
Right.
So if I can use you for this and that, or if you have, if you're engaged in life some other way, but you've got a couple days a week you want to tow.
Right.
That kind of stuff works out really well for me. And this was not my intent.
Right.
I was going to have a steady staff. I was going to give them these careers. It was just going to be very cut, you know, this is it. But that's not how it works.
The numbers don't work out.
I'm forever juggling resources and can you do this and that and, oh, since you're not doing that, could I maybe pull you over here to do this?
Right.
And because we can get a flood of rides, we can get a flood of students, the other thing we do is we tow private gliders when they show up.
Okay.
So
it's like the tow operation is almost a whole separate operation
yeah.
then.
Yeah.
It's like you've got the glider flying, you've got the instruction, the commercial glider flying, which are at least related, but they're still gliders. And the tow operation is to tow your gliders and anyone else who shows up.
Yep.
So being a tow pilot is actually a different job than being the glider pilot.
Yeah.
It's a very different description, and you might have a tow pilot when you have some who aren't glider pilots.
Oh, absolutely.
They just tow.
Yeah. Now, we will give them some experience in a glider, some dual experience in a glider, so they know what's going on back there.
Right. And I think we talked earlier, and you said just to get checked out to tow, you need to be towed three times, or you have to have,
Simulated glider tows.
Okay.
Or three glider tows with you in the glider.
Right.
Because the Pawnee is a single seat ship,
yeah,
you know, it's a little who wants to get this guy's first toe?
Yeah.
So yeah, we like you to have a lot of glider experience because
you know what's going on.
Yeah,
and as a tow pilot, you also need tail dragger experience.
Lots of it.
Yeah,
150 hours.
And that's for insurance, and practically makes sense as well.
Yeah, insurance wants 500 total hours and 150 tail drivers.
Okay. So that's what you're looking for when you look for a tow pilot, is a minimum of 500 hours and 150 tail drivers.
Right.
Okay.
Now, there's ways around that. You know, if a guy comes in here and says, well, I've got 300 hours, but it's all in a tail dragger.
It's all in a Pawnee.
Or one of those ag wagons, which I guess is like the hardest thing in the world to
I was telling you, those are horrible.
Yeah. you know, that kind of stuff. There's obviously exceptions to it, and sometimes we need to pay a little more.
Right.
You know, and tell our insurance company about this person and get their approval.
Right. until they get up to the insurance company's 500.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and it's... You know, it's considered one of the most dangerous jobs in aviation.
Okay.
So
a lot can go wrong.
Well.
Or just flying slow. I mean.
Oh, not. I don't know if I would say a lot can go wrong, but there's a few things that can go wrong badly.
Right.
They can go badly wrong.
And probably low to the ground.
What?
And probably close to the ground is where the problems could happen.
Well, that's where all the bad stuff happens in aviation anyway, right?
Yeah, it's not bad till you're close to the ground.
And, you know, the tow pilot's thinking about his personal safety. And sorry, they're all guys right now. I just had a woman come in the other day who might tow for us. But so he's looking for his personal safety. And he's thinking about the things that you always think about single engine. You know, what if I have an engine out now? What am I going to do now? Where am I going to put this thing down now? So he's thinking about that. But then he's also thinking about the safety of the one or two or three people that he's towing. Where is that guy going to...
Where they're going to land.
Where they're going to land. And how is he, would he disconnect them? And how, you know, so there's, you know, plus they need to be looking for... traffic in the pattern.
Other aircraft.
They need to be considering what they're towing, what glider they're towing.
Right, yeah, you were saying that, that all the different gliders have different tow speeds and different characteristics.
Right.
Just to sort of wrap up what you're looking for in tow pilots is you can get less than 500 hours, but you've got to work it out with the insurance company, so it has to be someone that you're pretty confident in that you probably know from somewhere else. If not, it's 500 hours for insurance and at least 150 tail drag.
That's the standard. Right.
Okay, and I think you said earlier you can have one full-time tow pilot year-round is about what you felt.
Pretty
like.
Much, yeah.
And then a lot of people could come in and fill in.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we pretty much want to have somebody available every day.
Okay.
When the winter gets very weather-dependent, and then, you know, on-call people.
Right, and then your commercial glider pilots and glider instructor pilots... you have more of those on staff, or again, it's more people just available to come and fill in?
We have one in the season, you know, which will start with our wave camp on March 25th.
Okay.
We have one full-time on-staff instructor.
Okay.
This year, I think we're bringing on a second one.
Okay.
To run our cross-country program. And then we've got people like Gabe who can fill in.
And do the tow flying or the glider flying.
Yeah, so you can get out of the tow plane and fly with a student. And that comes in handy, especially if somebody's just coming for a checkout and then they're going to fly one of our single-seaters. You know, that typically takes a couple hours. And it just helps us move with the needs.
Right, so you rent out gliders as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you could come here as a glider pilot and you need to do a checkout.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will throw them in the single-seater and have them go.
Mm-hmm.
So you said you're looking at bringing on another commercial or flight
instructor.
Another instructor. Where do you find your pilots, your glider pilots? Are they?
Well, interestingly, so far, they found me.
Okay. They've come to you and looked for work. So they're people, they're already glider pilots, and they want work.
Well, yeah, it's not a big money job.
Right.
And, you know, we've got big plans here in Minden, and we've got the backing of the airport administration and the local government. They really want to make Minden the soaring mecca.
Ah.
So we've got pretty big plans here.
And it could do that, too, just from I know this Eastern Sierra is the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing is there's some great soaring sites that are just great soaring sites.
Okay.
So when their weather's not good or when you're taking a no-fly day or whatever, not a whole lot else to do.
Okay. So this, I mean, I kind of stumbled on you by accident. But I mean, I've been reading enough to, and I think you're right, this could be probably certainly one of the best soaring sites in the U.S.
Yeah.
Without... I mean, I don't know where else.
Well,
and
it has been in the past, and there were some political issues.
Okay, so it's gone up and down, never because of the area, just for other reasons that it's.
Yeah, and you know, soaring is, so they say, a shrinking market.
Okay.
You don't need a medical to fly a glider, so a lot of older pilots let their medical lapse and they fly gliders.
Right.
And young people now have lots of options with light sport and paragliding and.
Yeah, paragliding's probably.
Yeah, there's other ways that you can get airborne.
Yeah.
And soaring is expensive.
Right.
You know, unless you go the club route, getting your glider license can be, we would say between $5,000 and $6,000 to get to actually get your private glider license.
And right, if you don't have a powered license already.
Right. Yeah. So if you're 18 and you're looking to fly and you really like being, you know, that in that 3D world, I don't know what it costs to get into paragliding, but
about $5,000.
Okay, so it's about the same.
Yeah, yeah, but then it's cheap because you take it with you everywhere.
Right.
That's
right.
The advantage. I mean, that's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then the also what I hear from parents, and I don't want to believe this, I hear that kids would rather do virtual flying than real flying.
Well, that's funny because Mike Singer, my partner on the website, worked on Flight Sim for years, and he's a instrument pilot, you know, private instrument pilot, and he loves flying on the computer.
Uh-huh.
He's even said, you know, he's like, well, I thought of renting a plane and flying up to Friday Harbor, but I thought, well, I can just do it at home.
Yeah. Silvio set up his flight simulator at home, and when my kids were home over Christmas, one of my sons, who will never come to the airport, he took a glider ride just so he could say he did, and he's never going to do it again. He flew that flight simulator, and he said, yeah, Mom, I just landed a 747 gear up in Dubai.
God, see, I'm the opposite. I don't like flying simulators.
I have no patience for the electronic stuff. Yeah.
No, it's like it misses the whole point, which is being out there.
Right.
I mean, it's right. Yeah, it's just totally different.
Well, we've got a couple new young people. We're trying to rope them in.
Yeah. So to back up a little bit, if you get your glider pilots, it sounds like they come to you. We get a lot of questions from people who are just starting to fly,
mm-hmm.
and they're looking for that first flying job. Most of them are powered plane guys. And if someone like that who's getting their license up in Reno or somewhere, but they were coming down here frequently and were interested in gliding, that's someone you would consider hiring as a tow pilot at some point.
If they had the qualifications.
Once they got their minimum requirements.
No, it's a great job for building time.
Yeah.
Because you take off and land, and you take off and land, and you take off and land,
yeah.
and you get lots of logbook entries.
In a plane that you actually have to, the pawn you actually have to fly. It's not
right.
like a, you know, 152 or, you know, right. tail drag is just to take a little bit more hands-on
right.
flying. And glider flying, if they got into that, is another really good stick and rudder type of flying.
Well, we do believe that whatever you fly, you'll be a better pilot if you learn how to fly a glider.
Yeah. I think I told you that last time we talked that I totally concur with that. With everything so automated that flying the, not even the bigger planes anymore, the 172s have G1000s and autopilots, and everything's right. focused on automation. And it seems to me people are losing some of those basic skills. And glider flying, getting into it or doing it part-time, even if you're an airline guy, wouldn't be a bad thing to do.
We have a lot of airline pilots that fly
right.
gliders.
Who's flying airlines isn't flying anymore.
Yeah. In fact, Gordon Bettker is a FedEx pilot.
Okay.
And he holds some records out of Minden.
Ah. Well, FedEx is a good, if you're going to fly for an airline, that's
yeah.
the...
Yeah, you don't have to deal with any of those pesky passengers.
But I think they actually pay more. FedEx and UPS are like the unsung right. airline jobs that nobody really looks at.
But he's totally into aviation. He was in the... he comes from an aviation family. He flew as a kid. He flew, I think he flew in the Navy.
Okay.
But, you know, he's done some record break, both solo and dual record breaking flights in wave out of Minden.
Huh. Yeah, but you get, Bishop used to have the altitude record. So, in
yeah.
theory, here you could get the same thing.
Well, we're not allowed to go above 28,000 feet anymore.
Oh, that's going to limit it.
Well, and that's only in a certain spot.
Okay.
We're limited to 18.
With the. Exactly. You have to file IFR after that.
Right.
So,
Gordon actually has a letter of agreement with the FAA that allows him to fly in Class A airspace.
Okay.
So he looks at the weather and plans his flights and
figures out what days he can do it.
Yeah. And his dream is a downwind dash, you know, to end up in South Dakota or Minnesota or something. He's been as far as Colorado Springs. No. Steamboat Springs.
Wow, that's a long...
Not as long as flight. I think his longest flight was May 31st of last year, out of Minden, 2,259 kilometers, 13.5-hour flight.
Wow. Where'd he go to?
Back and forth in wave here.
Huh. That's pretty cool. I mean, I knew you could go far in a glider. I didn't realize you could actually go that. I mean, I was thinking a couple hundred miles.
So, he did it for the distance record. So he was sort of doing a flight that goes down, I don't know if you know where Inyokern is.
Yeah, down
to Inyokern and back up to, I'm forgetting the name, turn point up north.
Huh.
And sometimes you can get out east a little bit. And
what's the limiting factor in that? I mean, you'd think...
Daylight.
Oh, because you can't fly at night. Or can you can. You can fly at night. You need lights and...
If you've got lights, you can fly at night, but sometimes the meteorological conditions change when it gets dark.
Right, everything cools off. And
but he's got, but he landed before sunset.
Okay, so it's like June or something.
May. It's May 31st.
May 31st, so yeah.
Yeah. Huh. So the longest flights are being done in WAVE in Argentina.
Oh, I think I told you one of the, I hadn't thought about gliders much in here. I was guiding, so I was guiding on Aconcagua. And I was coming down from the summit, and at about 20,000 feet, we saw these two gliders coming up over a ridge. They were like 19,000 feet, and they were just doing these great turns. And you could see these mist kind of forming from the updraft, and you could see this mist forming. They were right in there with the mist, and finally the mist got thicker, turned into a cloud, and they just disappeared, went down and landed somewhere. But it was super cool. I mean,
I'm not remembering the name of the guy who set the distance records down there.
Well, we were above him looking down at him, which was...
That must have been neat.
It was, I wish I'd had my camera.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
You didn't have a camera?
No, when I'm guiding half the time, I'm just so focused on getting the clients to the summit.
Oh, okay.
You know, I got a job, I got a mission. And
you can't...
I tried my couple when I first started guiding. I carried my camera because I like taking pictures. And I was like, no, I got to concentrate. I can't.
It was smart of you.
Yeah, they all carry. You know, all the clients have cameras.
Okay. So you took pictures of that kind of thing.
Yeah. But they're so wrecked coming down to the summit. They're not. They're like, oh, birds. I know those are gliders. since we got to wrap this up pretty soon, do you have any more personal goals in aviation? You must.
You know, my obsession is to make Minden what it can be.
Okay.
And, you know, and then step back from it. I don't think I can do this my whole life. It's, you know, we need to operate on the east side. You can ask Brad about that. We want to move us over there. I think that's a good idea. We need a good club here. There was a club here that kind of was floundering, and now it's back.
Okay.
In fact, they're having a chili dinner here tomorrow night.
So you don't view a club as competition? Work symbiotic relationship? Kind of.
I think so. And, you know, everybody's asking me, oh, Laura, you don't want a club. You know, it's like, well, you know what? I do. And I don't know where it's going. I don't know where wanting a club is going. But I think if Minden is going to be a huge, vibrant recreational aviation place.
Yeah.
I think you're going to need a club. I mean, I hope they don't go buy a tow plane and start doing their own tows. But
yeah, you could totally work with them on that, I would think. That sounds good.
Well, for now, yeah. I think the club can provide social functions. I mean, this is a sport.
Yep.
People like to gather and brag and,
you know.
I think they can provide safety education.
Yeah.
I think they can be a source for scholarships because they're a 501c3. So if they wanted to provide scholarships and then we could do the training and it could be a way for people. Because there is, I mean, even though glider pilots have a reputation for being pretty tight with their money, there is money out there and people want youth in soaring. And, you know, you don't find a 14-year-old kid who's got a lot of money unless his parents have a lot of money. So there are ways that a club can work with a commercial operation and not feel like we're competing. Now, how is this all going to unfold? I don't know. I mean, it's something I also need to step back from. They have a board of directors, and I do everything I can to promote participation in the club. They use us, since they don't have a clubhouse or anything, they use us as a spot to gather.
Right.
I'm fine with all that. How is it going to play out? I don't know. I'm just trying to play along with them and let them know that I would rather work with them than not, because they can get into a competitive position with me.
Even though they're not trying to make money.
They can't make money.
Right, they have to be break even at the...
Right.
Back to scholarships, that's something that I've been trying to look into. So there are scholarships available for glider to get a glider mm-hmm. rating mm-hmm. through the Soaring Society of America or just through various other...
I think the Soaring Society has a listing of them. You know, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I mean, there's the Kolstad, there's some well-known ones, the Kolstad Scholarship, there's the CAP, you can learn to fly glider through the CAP here.
Okay.
I got a scholarship from the 99s.
Oh, yeah.
To get my commercial glider rating.
And our friend who got her float plane rating with the 99s.
Right. And I mean, if you go out there and look around, there's various scholarships that you can find that do things.
Okay. So we've had a lot of questions about that, and I've been curious too, because I did a presentation at a high school up in Alaska and about flying in Nepal, but kind of like promote flying to the local kids up there, because most pilots in Alaska come from the lower 48. And there are a lot of programs available through Native corporations up there that nobody knows about.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
always like, there's a lot of stuff out there for people who want to fly.
Well, and the big gripe is a lot of scholarships go unclaimed.
Exactly, yes, that's...
It's like, well, okay, let's change that.
Yeah, that's... exactly what I'm trying to get to is get this out there, because there are scholarships and grants and various loans you can get, and I just hear it over and over again, well, I can't afford it. It's like, well, look into it. That's cool. I'll look into Soaring scholerships. That'd be great.
And you can start with the SSA. I'm sure they've got a repository of information.
We hope you liked this interview. If you found it useful, visit oddballpilot.com for more stuff like it.